I'd like now to welcome Lois Rudnick. She's a cultural historian. She's author of the book Katie Wells and Southwestern Modernism, published by the Museum of New Mexico Press. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much, Mary Charlotte.
Now, it's been a little over a year since the book about the artist Katie Wells came out, and spelled C-A-D-Y, so that there's no confusion. But
and he's a he.
And he's a he. He's a guy named Katie. And the book came out, and there was going to be an exhibition accompanying it that was delayed. Now there's three Katie Wells art exhibitions.
Yes, which is wonderful.
And one of them is opening at the University of New Mexico Art Museum tomorrow, Friday the 28th of January at 5:30. It's called Under the Skin of New Mexico, The Art of Katie Wells. There's also an exhibition that just opened at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art here in Santa Fe called Collecting New Mexico, The Forgotten Katie Wells. And Aaron Payne Fine Art on East Marcy Street is also having an exhibition of Wells' work. So
yes,
we are awash.
We are awash in Wells.
In Wells.
Indeed.
So tell us a little bit about this artist and his work and these exhibitions.
Okay. Katie Wells, born Henry Katie Wells in 1904, grew up in Southbridge, Massachusetts. He was the son of a very prominent family that owned the largest optical company in the world, American Optical. Both he and his younger brother, Mason, were gay, not a sexual orientation that was preferred by this very conservative Republican business family.
Both brothers.
Yes, there were other brothers who weren't, but there were five children, and the two youngest brothers were both gay. Katie, as his brother put it, was the only family rebel who got to do what he wanted. That included dropping out of five boarding schools and dropping out of Harvard after one semester, which was not what he was supposed to have done. He loved art from a very young age. He painted when he went to boarding school in Arizona. The sort of his father's last gasp to turn him into a regular male was to send him to a boarding school where sex of all kind was rampant, so that really didn't work. But Katie fell in love with the Southwest, with the high desert, with mountains, and said, wrote in his diary and to his friends and in the early 20s, he knew his destiny was out here.
Interesting.
And tried a variety of things, and in 1930 took a tour of East Asia and ended up in New Mexico in the winter of 31, 32, and was invited to stay in Hakona in the Pojoaque Valley by E. Boyd Van Cleve, who would become one of his closest friends. And after a year here, he decided he wanted to be, after a few months here, he decided he wanted to choose painting as his vocation, not a choice his family had approved when he was younger. He was also trained as a classical pianist. And went to Andrew Dasburg and said, I want to study art. And Andrew looked at some of his work and said, well, come back in a year if you're serious. I think you're a dilettante. And so he went back east. He studied art history at the Fogg. He came back in 33. Dasburg looked at his work and said, all right, I'll take you on. 3 months later, he had his first exhibit at the Museum of New Mexico with Agnes Pelton and Raymond Johnson, and got great reviews. His studying with Dasburg that summer for 4 months was about the only formal training he got as an artist. He was predominantly self-taught. He was a watercolorist because he loved the spontaneity and freedom and expressiveness that watercolor allowed him. And in his early years here in the early 30s, his work looks a lot like Andrew Dasburg's watercolor, sort of cubist and a lot of expressive, wonderful landscape work with the landscape kind of exploding with color. A lot like John Maron's work that he did out here as well in 29 and 30. By the mid-30s, he has settled in the Pojoaque Valley. He has bought a home in Hakona. His good friend E. Boyd has become a mentor for him and inspired him to begin collecting santos and other Hispano-religious objects. By 1952, his collection was around 300 objects. He, in 51, actually decided to donate his collection to the Museum of New Mexico with two provisos. One, that they begin a Department of Spanish Colonial Art, which they had never had before, and two, that they hire E. Boyd, who was the foremost expert on Hispano-religious art, self-taught also, as their curator, and they did both. And as Robin Gavin says in the essay she wrote for my book on Wells's collection and its influence on his paintings, This donation was really the foundation of the first Spanish colonial art collection in the state. It's very important for New Mexico's cultural patrimony. And she has put together a show at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art of much of it are the objects that he collected and donated. There's tin work, the santos. She's even found the specific retablos and santos that he used as inspirations for his paintings, and the paintings are next to them, so you can see how different he was working with them, much more darkly and expressionistically than the santeros, who painted very serene, for the most part, created, carved and painted very serene looking saints. His saints are full of emotion and turmoil.
It's interesting to see the collection of an artist as opposed to the collection of an art collector who isn't an artist.
Exactly, exactly. And particularly an artist who paid enormously deep respect to the spirituality of particularly the Penitente tradition, without pretending that he was an insider or was speaking at all from, you know, an Hispano-Catholic voice. He was tremendously moved, I think, by the penitentes and by the santeros particularly that were carved for them, because of the fact that they combined music and theater and ritual, because penance is a very important part of their sense of obligation. And he was a man who, I feel from reading his diaries and letters, never felt he could do enough penance for being born into privilege without earning it, and also because of the struggles he had with his sexual identity when his family did not want to deal with that or speak of it. And one of the reasons I think he came here was that this was a place where if you had money, you could be gay and independent and do as you wished without anybody really caring very much, as long as you weren't doing anything inappropriate in public. So it was a place he could be free, he could find his vocation as an artist, and he could also live as he wanted to as a man and an artist. And this is my, of course, interpretation of why he found this subject matter so fascinating. But his whole life he painted penitente moradas and penitente crosses and santos, who are deeply moving, deeply tragic. He was very drawn, I think, to the tragic history that was under the skin of New Mexico, as a friend of his put it. He said, "You're the only artist who ever got under the skin of New Mexico. You paint its tragic past."
And that's the name of the exhibition.
The name of the exhibition is Under the Skin of New Mexico, for the same reason. So his work in the mid to late 30s became much darker, much more abstract and surrealistic. He joined the army in World War II at age 36 because he felt he owed his life to New Mexico and is finding himself to the state. This was his way of paying back. He spent the last 9 months of the war mostly in Germany, seeing some horrific battles. He was an aerial topographer, which deeply affected his perspective after he came back from the war. His home was 12 miles from Los Alamos, and he came back to explosions on the Pajarito Plateau, which he surmised might be atomic, since nobody knew what was going on. They weren't, but his house literally, viscerally, he could feel the continuing atomic project, and he was appalled by it and painted some extraordinary, what I would call post-apocalyptic landscapes, believing that New Mexico would be ground zero for World War III because of what was going on at Los Alamos. No one was painting anything like this in the post-war period in New Mexico.
It's unusual to this day. I mean, painters romanticize
yes.
New Mexico.
I call him the not land of enchantment painter.
Yeah. So at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art, we get a chance to look at the collection and some of the paintings themselves.
That were inspired by what he collected, yes.
And then at the University of New Mexico Art Museum, it's a comprehensive...
It is. It's a retrospective of his work from 1933 to 1953. It's the first retrospective exhibition of his work since 1967, so it's been well over 40 years since he's been given a show of his own. His work has been shown in group exhibitions, but no one has seen the corpus of his work. And I have to say, even though I'm the curator, so there's a certain amount of bias, I think that people who come to see this exhibition will be blown away by this work. That many people who live here don't know Katie Wells. Art historians certainly do. And the range and diversity of his technique and the depth of his technique and the power of his technique for a man who had essentially a 20-year career as a painter because he died of a heart attack 10 days before his 50th birthday, is astonishing. So I'm really looking forward to the public's reaction to this body of work.
It's interesting that he has not been given his due until now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it homophobia?
I don't think it has anything to do with the sexual orientation. I think it has to do with the way he paints New Mexico. There are two things.
The unromantic
view. His work is very dark, very disturbing. It's been interesting to see people respond to the work in Aaron Payne's gallery. The work that most people are interested in purchasing is his more traditional, more realistic, less frightening works, and the works that really appeal to me are the darker and the more violent and the more tragic, the better. I like all of his work, but I'm particularly drawn to that. The other, I think, reason has to do with the medium of watercolor, which in the kind of classification system of art value is much lower on the totem pole than oil. And he did paint a little bit in oil, because George O'Keeffe pushed him to do it. He didn't really like painting in oil, but he was a watercolorist, and that's not a medium that has the same kind of, let's say, panache that oil painting does for most.
Now, he was in a whole community of artists and writers and so on, and one of his friends was Witter Binner.
Yes.
And there is a program coming up also at the UNM Art Museum on the 1st of February, next mm-hmm. week, Tuesday.
Yes, indeed. It's called Pieces of Cake, and it will be an adaptation by UNM theater professor Brian Herrera and five actors from the Albuquerque theater community of an absolutely hilarious and savage satire that Witta Binner, who was a poet and art collector who lived in Santa Fe, did of Mabel Dodge, art patroness Mabel Dodge Lujan from Taos. And it is, you don't have to really know that it's her. The play has a kind of timeless quality because it's really about the, you might say, obsessive compulsive desire of wealthy Americans to consume the world's cultures. She has seven husbands. She has to be given a kind of treatment of mastodon ball soup every day to get her sexual energy up. She falls in love with men all over the world. She collects everything she possibly can. So I see it really as a very early play about American compulsive consumerism of exoticism. And Brian's adapting it, because it's a very long play, to a 50-minute reader's theater. So it should really be terrific fun.
And there's a whole lot more going on, and I guess if people want to find out about that,
they could go to the University of New Mexico Art Museum website.
And that website is unm.edu, and you can look for Art Muse. Well, Lois Rudnick is a cultural historian, and once again, her book is called Katie Wells and Southwestern Modernism, published by the Museum of New Mexico Press, and people might want to pick that up and then, armed with those essays, go to some of these exhibitions.
Yes, indeed.
And once again, Collecting New Mexico, The Forgotten Katie Wells is at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art. Aaron Payne Fine Art on East Marcy Street is holding an exhibition of Wells' work. And the UNM Art Museum opening is tomorrow, the 28th of January, at 5:30, Under the Skin of New Mexico, The Art of Katie Wells. Lois Rudnick, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.